Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Sally Alcordi, and welcome to Public Advocates. Today, I'm going to be interviewing James Lane, who is running for Congress for the Green Party for the areas of Staten Island and parts of Brooklyn. So I hope you will consider voting for James Lane or supporting his campaign. He will be on the ballot for the Green Party. Oh, he's here now. Hold on just a second, please. Hello, James.
Hello, Sally. I can't believe I'm late for the show. I wanted to call in 5 minutes early, but I was just here with my sister, and she was just giving a donation for the campaign, so I'm totally excited right now. So I sound like I'm talking 100 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Donations take precedence over promotion because who knows? Who knows? Maybe the right person will hear this and send you a large donation, and I hope they do. Tell me what it is that you are looking for in terms of donations, your website, but then we're going to get very particular in regard to the issues that you care most about. So at the front, give us your website and that.
Sure, perfect. So the first thing is the website is votejameslane.org. That's votejameslane.org, so it's my name with vote in front of it. Very simple to remember, and we've been using it as hashtags as well. And, you know, everybody laughs at me because I have, like, a kind of high goal to do fundraising because this is a special election, and the election is about 56 days away. I'm asking, you know, my personal goal is to raise $100,000, and I sort of base this on my last public advocate race that I ran in 2013, where I was able to get 17,000 votes, which was like about 2% of the vote for about 29 cents a voter, you know, because basically when Greens run campaigns, we're very efficient on what we're actually buying and printing and mailing out to with targeted mailings. So my goal is I'm trying to reach out to 400,000 voters in this New York District 11 to let them know about what the campaign stands for, what the Green Party stands for, and why I should be their new representative. And so based on that 400,000, I figure if we can raise like 25 cents per vote, because, you know, I want to go in there and get 100% of the vote. That's always the way that I look at what things, you know. Right now we're up against a district where people assume that it votes mostly Republican, but, you know, I'm looking at numbers right now and I'm seeing that that's not the case. There's a mix of the voter registrants in that area. So I think the right amount of messaging, the right amount of political education about, you know, what the parties stand for and what I'm running against and running for would actually turn out a lot of votes for us. I'm really excited. Like I said, I'm trying to take a breath now because I've been getting hit with so much support. It's just been amazing. Like, as soon as we sent out our press release, we had a couple of articles come up right away, organizations that I've been working with closely for the last several years have been throwing support behind us. We're trying to get official endorsements. But so that's as far as what's going on with the campaign this week. And, of course, a couple of the issues that I'm running on. First thing is, you know, in Staten Island, the main reason why we decided to launch this campaign or why I threw my hat into the ring was the district attorney over there, Dan Donovan. He's the district attorney that failed to indict the cops that were involved with the Eric Garner choking death. And, you know, and if anything, as a district attorney, you know, I don't know what he instructed the grand jury to do or whatever, but there's just a basic thing of the police are here to protect us. And if they kill an unarmed man, at least there should be some form of neglect charge that comes up. So if you couldn't indict them on murder, because we all know legally when you say somebody's convicted of murder that they go in with the predetermined idea that they're going to go in and murder somebody. You know, that's the whole legal definition of it. But if somebody dies because of your mishandling, then it is neglect. And Dan Donovan should have been able to indict not just Daniel Pantaleo, but the other cops that were with him that didn't do anything to really help Eric Garner, because that's the main issue with the police in New York. I mean, they're hired by us as taxpayers to protect and serve, and it seems like all they're doing is killing us, which is just not acceptable, and abusing us. So that's my first issue, and you know, and along with that would be calling for the release of the records that were surrounding that grand jury case, because there's all this, you know, they're trying to keep it quiet, no visibility, no transparency into actually what was instructed and talked about, and so we want to bring this all out to the surface. The next thing we want to do is talk about safe communities for all, regardless of race, gender, or economic status.
I'm sorry, say it again, safe.
Safe communities.
Okay.
Yeah, safe streets for all, safe communities for all, regardless of race, gender, economic status. You know, we've seen instances where there's heavy police presence in developments that are, you know, lower economic status, working class, and you know, people on public assistance or whatever. You know, like for some reason or another, it's a living prison for people, and. Most New Yorkers don't get that because for whatever reason, maybe they live in a better neighborhood, but they're only able to do that because maybe they live in a better neighborhood and they're sharing an apartment with like five other people to live in that better neighborhood. So maybe they don't see what's happening, but if they weren't sharing a room with five other people, they would be in the other neighborhoods that are subsidiaries of the are subsidized by the city, and they would see what it's like to live in those communities where cops are constantly patrolling the areas, you know, looking at you like you're a perpetrator, and you're just like hanging out on the front of your steps or whatever, and they're looking at you like you're about to commit a crime.
These quotas for stop and frisk. Tell me what the status of stop and frisk is now, and what's going down with quotas.
Well, it's just disgusting because these quotas, I mean, quotas, we're using the police as like bill collectors, basically. We're using them to say, okay, the city needs revenue. What should we do? You know, well, here's the things we could do. We could tax, you know, Wall Street. We can, you know, they have these stock transfer taxes that they collect from Wall Street, but then they give them right back to them, which makes no sense at all. And whenever we start talking about, like, giving Wall Street, like, you know, taking more money from revenue or revenue from Wall Street, they start threatening, well, we're just going to leave. We're going to go to New Jersey. You know, and I always had the argument, well, then just go to New Jersey then, and we'll use those buildings as, like, affordable housing, you know, because that would be, like, a nice place to live, in my opinion. But
yeah,
so quotas.
Yeah, these businesses, if this is true, these businesses are costing us more than the income they're generating by far in terms of what we would see from the money. So, yeah, so long, bye-bye now.
Yeah, exactly. Get out of here. Same thing, like Madison Square Garden has some kind of taxes they haven't paid in X number of years, and they're still going to be here not paying. So it's really disgusting. So, yeah, so quotas is really a way of just oppressing the people and also earning revenue from them. I mean, it's like the most disgusting thing you could think of, you know, because – The majority of crimes, you know, and this is why it was so great. Like, do you remember when it was in January or December when the cops refused to work, right? That was their big thing that they're going to do. They're going to protest working. They're not going to do arrests unless it's, like, absolutely necessary. And ironically, that's exactly what the people of the city want. We don't want to be arrested for, you know, jaywalking or so-called loitering when you're waiting for a friend at a bus stop. You know what I mean? You know, we want the police to actually do things like, oh, there was a bank robbery. Let's investigate who is responsible for the bank robbery. That's what the police should be doing. You know,
well,
or
actually, in the UK, there was a what do you call that, walkout, I guess, by the police or a strike, and things were vastly improved. The people who lived there were like, this is great, yahoo, you know, so.
I know, it's great, because it's like, that's how we felt here in New York, because it was like, what? You know, have you noticed how nice it is? It's like, you know, I saw people walking down the street, you know, holding hands, singing Kumbaya. It was a really, really a nice, amazing thing. So, yeah, and that's what people ask for, because ideally, like, communities can police themselves. I mean, you know, if there's an issue in your block, you know, we used to have community watches that were actually pretty much people that were elected by their own community, by their, you know, by their block association or whatever, and they would take turns with like a whistle and a phone and just walk around and make sure everything in their community was fine. Not like a George Zimmerman situation where you're walking around with a weapon, but, you know, you just have some way to communicate if you see something that's suspicious and, you know, let people know that, you know, they should be aware. I mean, but still, this is all part of an idea that people are just inherently criminals, which is not the case at all. I mean, the reason that we have crime is because of the economic injustices in this country. I mean, if going back to the Wall Street situation, you know, if we were taxing Wall Street, then a lot of the revenue that we're getting from these from Wall Street and, you know, these one percenters that make X amount of monies, that would actually come back into our economy, and it would actually help to keep programs that are being cut every day, like, you know, for community centers, for healthcare, for housing, for job creation, for you know, job education, all these things. These things could be done if we go back to taxing how we used to do back before the 70s. I mean, when we had that kind of tax structure before Reaganomics and everything kicked in, we were able to have a lot more foundations set up for, like, the arts and, you know, all these things. But now, because we've sort of switched our whole concept around where corporations have more rights than people, then this is why we're in this situation. And I swear, like, I see, you know, I'm going to be 50 years old this year, and I've seen this cycle of, okay, things were bad in the 70s, they were bad in the 80s. You know, maybe some people thought they were getting okay in the 90s because of the internet boom, but then it started going back downhill again. And so now we're back where we are in the 70s, and there's nobody that I know of any elected officials that are talking about, yeah, we need to fix our tax structure, we need to go back and look at these corporations that have been given these rights that they could just do whatever they want to do without any kind of persecution.
Yeah, and the government is shoring up corporations. Not the least, my least favorite is the pharmaceutical companies. But yeah, these people make money hand over fist, and we need to assist them. No, we don't.
Right.
So yeah, I do want to talk about vaccines, James. It is the most important issue to me because it targets the youngest. And right now, the Department of Health and Human Services, which is over the FDA and the CDC, they're asking for public comment on an adult vaccination schedule and a forced adult vaccination schedule. So where do you come down on that?
Well, you know, it's just really appalling to me that we're even talking about like this forced vaccination schedules, because people should be allowed the choice to choose what's going into their bodies, and for the government to sort of mandate that you take this, you have to look at the I guess you have to look at the motive behind why the government is telling you to do something. You know, and the only thing I'm seeing is really just profit for these pharmaceutical companies. You know, there's obviously somebody that's really taking money from these pharmaceutical companies and saying, well, hey, I got a good way we can make more drugs, make more money, and we could force people to get these things. You know, and that's really what it all seems. It's all profit. And it's really disgusting that I'm not seeing more elected officials come out and sort of admit that. Well, I guess, of course, they're not going to because they're getting money from them.
They have no courage. James, we look to you for courage. Because they all know what's going on, and they're doing nothing about it. So I haven't ever met with a legislator who was not apprised of the ingredients, diseases, and intent of vaccines. And not one of them will step forward and do anything to protect our children. So this has become my lone issue because it's such a glaring they're knocking off our kids. And the jails are going to be swelling from the shaken baby syndrome. And, of course, the people in neighborhoods where they don't think they can afford to fight this, allegation successfully, they're the ones who are going to jail first. I'm not saying that everyone isn't going to wind up there, because if they don't demand the vaccination records, they're not taking into account the reason these children are dying. So, you know, also autism is affected 340% more, affects black boys than other communities, according to the CDC whistleblower. So I'm saying this is the issue and the racial issue of our time. It truly is, but also shaken baby syndrome and the incarceration of parents. So,
yeah. Actually, could you... would you mind, you know, so I'm on your show, but I'm going to interview you. Would you mind telling everybody about the CDC whistleblower?
Oh, sure. William W. Thompson, the CDC whistleblower, has come out linking the MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine to autism. He has said that he is ashamed that this report was doctored, if you will, to eliminate the fact that 340% of more black boys are getting becoming autistic as a result of this MMR vaccine. Now, the person who thwarted his attempt to make a correct report, who wound up, it resulted in a falsified report because of Julie Gerberding, who was then the director of the CDC, Center for Disease Control and Proliferation, and Prevention. She went on from there to become the director of vaccines for Merck, which is the company that produces this harmful vaccine. So it couldn't be a more glaring wrong, and you know, the denial of the association between the MMR vaccine and autism, you know, it has been prevalent forever, the denial. But so has the fact that that the measles virus, this not natural measles, this lab-created measles, is causing autism. So even if it's the single measles vaccine, that's what's resulting is autism.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and wasn't there this guy that who helped pull off this vaccine too? I think he's on the run. I don't remember his name. I think it's Paul Thorson or something like that.
Paul Thorson.
Yeah.
Who Bill Posey in Congress in a hearing called a scumbag? Okay, have you ever heard that word used in the annals of Congress? Yeah, he called him a scumbag. And basically, he's on the run. He's one of the FBI's 25 top most wanted. And the irony here is that they know where he is in Brussels, but they are not extraditing him to the United States. Now, why would that be? I've actually offered to do a fundraiser for the airfare, if that's what's holding him up.
Right. No, exactly.
FBI's most wanted. FBI's most wanted, but they can't get him home.
Well, you know what the problem
is. They know where he is.
He's white, so they're not going to look for him.
Well, that's not it. They're going to open a can of worms. I mean, imagine if there was a trial, if they brought him back, and they brought him to trial because he's the most wanted, right? That place
exactly.
Will be flooded with autism parents and their autistic children, you know? And I say if you will sponsor my bill for a vaccine-free 2015, parents of vaccine-injured children will camp out in their local offices of their U.S. representatives to make sure that bill goes through.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think we might have spoken briefly about this at rallies I've supported with you because, you know, I like to, you know, support the cause. But I always personally – I'm a believer that I'm for informed choice. You know, I'm for, because, you know, we both agree that.
Informed.
These,
no, stop.
Yeah.
They call them life-saving vaccines. Who would say no to a life-saving vaccine? They don't
exactly.
Call them life-stealing vaccines. So if we cannot prevent them from lying to us, we can only prevent them from offering them to us.
Right.
The crime is in the offering.
I know.
Because it's not, you know, truthfully presented. In fact, it is a bold-faced lie that is repeated over and over again. Life-saving vaccines, no, life-destroying vaccines, you know?
Right.
So we just cannot rely on these criminals to present an accurate truth. No one would ever in their whole wide world have ever said yes had they known the ingredients. No one.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, you know, like I said, it's just because there's so much evil in this world, you know, and I'm for the rights, you know, the adults and parents, you know, are the ones that are really responsible for their children. And, you know, I'm really for their right to choose if they want to go that route of believing that their doctor has their best interest at matter. But I'm also for the rights of people that choose that they are informed about vaccines and the risk associated with them and choose not to do it. So my whole thing with the initial bill as it is, it's for an all-out ban, which to me sort of prevents the rights of people that do want to poison themselves. and it's just like
no,
with like cigarettes.
No, oh, come on. But you know they wouldn't have it if they knew the truth.
That's oh, I know that too.
Saying. The crime is in the offering. Would
I
you
know.
Offer somebody, you know, in 2013, they had a 15, believe I saw the last of 15 meetings on testing the anthrax vaccine on children.
Right.
You know, and the people who are going to say yes, even though you're using the word anthrax,
right.
The people who are going to say yes are like, oh, well, a doctor's offering it to me or a nurse is offering it to me, you know. So they're cloaked in their white lab coats, which I want to donate boxloads of lab coats to homeless shelters, so we defuse their authority.
Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, to me personally, it's just another way of oppressing people and using science as the reason that you're oppressing people. You know, it's like, well, this is guaranteed to make you feel good, make you sure you don't get like an annoying chicken pox rash. I mean, and it's funny because where are the studies that talk about like, well, what happens if you get the measles? Do you die from the measles or do you die from something associated by getting the measles? Would that person that died from getting the measles, would they have died by just having a normal cold? You know, and these are really the issues that in science, it seems like it's totally been taken over by the profit behind it, you know, and it's upsetting. It's beyond upsetting because, like we said, we've mentioned briefly and touched upon, is that we're just turning our citizens into human guinea pigs for any kind of thing that they want to push. Like, for example, like with the drug industry as a whole, if you watch TV, you'll see a drug for like, hey, I heard you have you know, high cholesterol or heart problems. We'll take this drug. And then, so, you know, that's part of this 30-second pitch is to take this drug. But then 20 seconds of that 30-second pitch is all the disclaimers about all the different issues it'll give you, liver damage, brain damage, this kind of cancer, that kind of cancer. And at the end of the day, the people like the FDA and all these organizations, they don't mind because they know that once that person takes that drug, then that opens them up to get all these other diseases. And then so now they have to take some other drug or some other therapy or pay into this horrible medical system that we have. So it's really a vicious cycle. Like vaccines is part of this whole horrible form of like getting people to poison themselves to make them feel bad about themselves and to make money off of that situation. So,
well,
I mean, yeah.
It's unbelievable. You have to hear this because, you know, I interviewed parents of vaccine-injured children, and in interviewing the Gardasil, parents of Gardasil-injured girls, I
mm-hmm.
have found there's a new person in your pediatrician's office. Do you know who it is?
Who?
It's a psychotherapist who, if you have a reaction to the Gardasil vaccine, will tell you that it's hormones and that you need to go on additional drugs or you have to be psychiatric drugs. So there's actually an additional person that is working with pediatricians now when the girls are severely affected by these vaccines and some of the behaviors are peculiar and some of the, disabilities are extreme, and death, of course, is associated with the HPV vaccine, the Gardasil vaccine in particular. And so basically, that's who they've added. Now you're crazy. We've hurt you, so you must be crazy, and we're going to put you on psychotropic drugs.
Right.
which will hurt you and cause you to have suicidal thoughts. Suicidal thoughts for depression.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned psychotropic drugs because I just recently, remember going back to 2013, we talked about my adoption story.
Yes, I want to hear more about that.
Yeah, so I was adopted, and I didn't know this until after my parents died when I was 23, and then I had to go on this long search for 26 years to find my mother, and I did find her in 2013, and that was my inspiration to run. That was the reason why I decided to run. Yeah, because, everything that blocked me for all those years was government-related. There are laws in New York State that prevented me, even though I served in the military. I was like 48 years old at that time. I've been working for like 30-plus years, and they said, nope, sorry, we're going to give you the rights of like a newborn baby, and I have serious issues with that. And when I found my mother, after all those years, the first thing she said was, I never stopped thinking about you for 48 years. And she told me about everything she went through, all the depression she would go through year after year around my birthday, and prayed every day that she would see me before she died. And then it was just an amazing thing where I got to meet I have two half-sisters, and they have four kids between them, and meeting all my family. But just this pain that I had, like, after I found out about my adoption, and then everything for me to reconnect with my family was all in the power of the government, was in the power of New York State government having this law where I'm not allowed to see my original birth certificate. I mean, all my life I grew up with a birth certificate, which I had no idea was altered. It was amended, as they would say, and it had a Board of Department of Health certification on it, like, yep, this is your birth certificate. So already it's been like a legalized lie about like my existence. And then I've been talking to other adoptees and birth mothers.
Are you the exception to that? No, I have to ask you, are you the exception to that rule, or is this common practice?
This is common practice. So I'm going to go back to about the psychotropic drugs. And so now what I do as part of my life now is I try to talk about adoption and about the problems that we have in foster care and a lot of these practices, because recently there's some town hall forums going around about the problems with the foster care agencies and like ACS and all this, and the practices that they do is when children have been torn away from their families and they start to act a certain way because they've been torn away from their families, the first thing they do is, guess what? They give them the psychotropic drugs, and they turn that person into a walking zombie, as they describe themselves as. So this corruption of the pharmaceutical companies stretches in so many ways. It's like, and like I said, it touches the FDA directly. Like, the FDA will not approve natural remedies like herbs. They say, we can't give approval for that. We don't know what was behind that. But they'll approve things where they could put all kinds of carcinogens into a tube and inject it into your system. So the whole system is just corrupt, and we need people. Well, that's why I hope I get elected, to be that voice in Congress to say that's wrong and this has to change immediately, because we can't do this to our people anymore, and the people aren't going to stand for it anymore.
I would love that, a congressperson who would say that's wrong and we can't do that. I mean, Dennis Kucinich was the conscience of the Congress, and Lord knows, I miss him. I miss, because I spent so much time, getting people to support his bills or getting people to call in when he'd have a privileged resolution, anything he could do to bring light to injustice, to thwart an evil agenda, he would do this. And, James, you're a sweet, nice boy. I believe you too would do this. No, come on, man. We need some sweet, good people with high moral, as they say, it's not like you have no morals. You have bad morals, but it's not like people are without morality. They have bad morality. You, James, you have good morality. So this is what we need in Congress. And the fact that Kucinich used to bring up the issue of morality was like, wow, that's so refreshing, So I believe that if more people of conscience would step forward and run for office as James Lane, for Congress District 9,
Oh, District 11.
Oh, I apologize. District 11. I apologize.
No problem. Sorry to interrupt.
Now, where do you live, James? We want your address. No, I'm only kidding.
Because I'm such a sweet guy, I'm going to have all these flowers dumped on my front step.
Yeah.
So currently I live in Park Slope, Brooklyn. And so if I do win the seat, you know, people said, well, I have to move into the district. And people are saying, well, so you're going to move to – because my district, District 11, covers all of Staten Island and parts of Brooklyn, mostly Bay Ridge, Bensonhurst, Diker Heights, and some other areas. And so they said, well, you're going to move down to Bay Ridge, Bensonhurst. And I personally feel like, no, I think it's time to get more people out of Staten Island. I mean, Staten Island has been – a borough, you know, as we say on the streets all the time, especially during the Black Lives Matter marches, is that Staten Island is the forgotten borough. Even though we've had all these marches around the city, that's great, but nobody goes out to Staten Island where the situation actually is. I mean, you know, I don't know
so
if someone's going to come after
me.
I would move to Staten Island. You know, I would
cool.
totally move there and try to make it like the island oasis that it could be, because right now, you know, there's still people that are suffering after Superstorm Sandy over there. I mean, you know, where's their federal aid? Oh, I forgot. It's probably going to drone planes that our president is using to assassinate people. So that's an issue for me. I mean,
I remember when Bloomberg was holding up the trailers that were supposed to be sent to Staten Island. I remember having a whole campaign, release the trailers, you know, release the trailers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, where are we going to put them? I said, on all those golf courses in Staten Island. How about that?
Exactly.
And, of course, I was after the public advocate at the time, Bill de Blasio, who never got back to me. Oh, no, actually, that's not true. I was going, even though I called in during the winter when all of this went down, I was told I could talk to him in June. And I was like, June? I'm talking about people freezing on Staten Island. And I never even got the appointment in June. So there you go.
Right. Well, that's very typical of Bill and his public advocacy, who, you know, and my opponent, Tish James, is our new public advocate. And where has she been on a lot of issues such as Staten Island or Black Lives Matter or anything like that? And so, you know, and
such
quite
as
frankly,
mandated vaccines for the youngest. How about that?
Exactly.
I really
exactly.
appealed to her up, down, and sideways. And once they said the vaccines don't work, I'm like, oh, my God. I can't get anyone to stop this in the knowledge that the CDC has apologized and said they don't work. Wow.
Right.
This is stupefying that you cannot get a veto overturned with the CDC themselves saying it doesn't work. Oh.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, and this just shows you the corruptness. You know, and it's like we talked about before, because since we've met before on different things, when you have the press conferences, and you've had some pretty successful press conferences. You have people out there, but then when we get home and we watch the coverage, there's no coverage about it. I mean, there are very few stories.
Oh, you're not going to believe this, James. I want you to know what I got home to see, because I was like, oh, boy, all these cameras were there. I can't wait to see what happens, right? And I want you to know I had a 40-minute interview with the New York Times. And Rosanna Scotto of Fox called me personally. We talked for 20 minutes, okay? What
right.
do I see when I get home on CBS? Dr. Gonzalez's health report. What are they pushing? This was, I turned off the TV. I have no idea if it aired anywhere. I was just so thunderstruck. We are now recommending 2 flu shots for children under 1 year of age. Say what?
Right.
You know, and this was put forth to like a 20-minute piece, a special health report. And this was a commercial for vaccines, and it was being cloaked as a health report. And then they have some woman coming on and saying it's very important for pregnant women to get the flu shot, which, of course, the miscarriage rate rose by 4,250% in pregnant women associated with taking that flu shot. So I'm just saying. The pushback was immediate, to put it mildly, and no press coverage, even though the press was there, of the actual, City Hall, steps of City Hall speech. None.
Right. Amazing.
So,
what kind of world are we living in?
Do you use Brooklyn Public Access? Do you use Brooklyn Public Access?
Yes. Yes, and actually,
okay.
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I do have a new weekly show called Hot Indie Media Presents. It airs every Monday at 9 o'clock, and these are the types of issues that I do cover on there. I think I might have had your press conference on there as one of the episodes. So,
oh,
yeah.
Crazy.
I mean,
do you have where I'm calling to the mayor saying veto the mandated flu shots for the babies?
I have to go back and see my footage because I remember I had
okay,
problems that day.
I hope that's somewhere because he got the petition. He heard me vocally, even though he was on his way into City Hall. He did hear me. And, you know, it's not like the message hasn't been delivered 55 ways from Sunday. Now, what's the name of your show again? Because you said that very swiftly.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, please, everybody that's listening, I apologize. My energy levels are really high because I'm running this fast campaign, so I'm speaking 100 miles an hour. Oh, yeah. So the name of my weekly show on Public Access, which you could actually see online as well, too, if you go to the Brick Media Arts website. But anyway, it's called Hot Indie Media Presents. Could I tell you a little
Hot
bit about
indie
that?
Media. Hot
yeah.
Indie Media Presents. 9
yeah,
o'clock on Mondays, and BCAT, Brooklyn Cable Access Television, is where you can see that Mondays at 9 o'clock with James
Yeah,
Lane.
And actually they sort of rebranded it a bit, so now they call it like Brick Media Arts, but it's fine. If you come to my website and contact me, I can send you all the information where it is. But, you know, that Hot Indie Media, that actually, I started that about 10 years ago. So actually I'm having a birthday party this year that's going to sort of celebrate my 10 years of Hot Indie Media and also give back to the community and talk about like how music and art and politics all sort of work together and people need to get more involved in like local community activism and organizing and trying to like create like an awareness festival basically. But going back to Hot Indie News was the news website that I started. And the reason was because you and I know that we'll organize protests and rallies and press conferences. And just like you said, when you get home later that day, it seems that all of that media is skewed towards the way of the corporate interest, no matter what. And so I created like Hot Indie News to be a voice straight from the streets right out into the public's face of like what actually the article is. And so, you know, once again, this is another reason why I've been running for office is because once you get all this input and feedback and you put it out to the public and then you just get more and more frustrated. And, you know, like you mentioned before that I'm a nice guy, you know, I'm quite an angry guy, actually, of all the injustice.
Yeah.
I'm a nice guy, but I'm filled with rage about like how people
right.
feel that they could take advantage of you and without consequences. So that's me in a nutshell.
No, I don't mean to say, I'm not implying that you're weak. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that you have a moral compass, you know, and that's what's lacking in Washington. And
yes.
Yeah, so I didn't even know that Hot Indie News was your website. How about that?
Yeah.
Okay, so, all right, everybody go to hotindienews.com.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay, go there too. All right, now what other issues do you consider important? I'll tell you what I consider important. I can't get Congress to answer me on this. They will not even answer me. And that
mm-hmm.
is, and there's a petition against you right now to the White House, which
mm-hmm.
I will put in the comment area under the stream. It's chemtrails. The poisons they're spraying in the skies, and I just read an article that's saying they're going to start spreading the rabies and Ebola vaccines through the air now.
Ugh.
How do you like them apples?
Yeah, well, once again, it's the forced vaccine method, right? It's like, well, if we can't
right.
legally do it, we'll do it like indirectly
right.
on purpose. Yeah.
Right.
You know, and it's the problem.
What
yeah.
they're spraying right now, I mean, how do we stop these people? Congress funds it. Can you put a bill to unfund it?
Definitely. I mean, that's the power of Congress. You know, it's so funny because this is my problem about this country. Like, people have told me for the longest time when I was growing up, oh, you have to vote. It will make a difference. Make a vote. Make a difference. And when I was growing up, you know, I wasn't getting the full political picture of why voting matters or whatever. So, honestly, I never voted until the year 2000 when I was 35 years old because I grew up with these career politicians where I knew there were a lot of bills in Congress that weren't getting passed or anything like that. And I'm like, why am I going to vote to reelect this guy that's doing a bad job? Your voting is basically saying you're going to hire this employee way to do something good for you. So I'm not going to vote for that guy. But then when I become, you know, I was made aware in 2000 that there were alternative parties and candidates, then I became an advocate for them of, like, these are the people that are actually going to make change. So, you know, personally, I feel that the age of these politicians is over, and it's time for political activists to step up. You know, there's a lot of people that are doing things around the country right now that are doing great work, and I think it's time for them to actually step up and run for office like I'm doing and actually shake the system, shake it awake, and get these bills passed. Because there's, you know, it's funny because Congress, you know, as much as they are a tool.
All I can say is go bold. Go bold and people go bold. Go bold. Because now Bill Posey's got a bill in calling for a vaccinated versus unvaccinated study. Well, I gave him that study from Germany. So why are we doing it all over again? Ban them. Same thing with the chemtrails. Just ban them. Now, in terms of, I want to bring up one other petition to the White House, which should actually be a petition to Congress. Because Congress is the one who took away the liability of the drug companies, and then the Supreme Court endorsed it in 2011. But they took it away. They can put it back. So if you would sponsor the bill to lift the ban on suing the drug companies, that will stop it forthwith. I understand that there were even fewer vaccines than I thought. In 1983, there were 10 vaccines. Since this ban on suing drug companies has happened, you know we are up to 74 doses here in New York.
Right.
So
exactly.
After the age of 18. So if you could just lift the ban, that would be awesome.
Well, and this is the funny thing, too, because this is all about, like, I'm going to say it right up, you know, people will hate me. President Obama, I was never a fan of him because I knew that he was someone that was for, you know, blocking bills or any kind of rights of the people to sue corporations that damage them. You know, he calls them frivolous lawsuits and all this kind of stuff. It's a waste of taxpayer money. I'm like, so you're saying that these corporations are above every law in this country when you do things like that. So nobody should not be held accountable for something horrible that they do. I mean, and this is – and, you know, it's so funny, too, with Congress. Congress has even managed to depower themselves because there was a time where we couldn't go to war against another country without, like, going to Congress for approval to go to war, you know, like a war declaration
or
whatever.
Yeah, that's still what the Constitution says.
Right.
So,
now, you know, they have the president that comes out with these, you know, executive orders, and it just everything that you guys stand for, I don't care. I have an executive order. I'm just going to use it. And so Congress should be, hey, guess what? You know, I think it's time that we do something that prevents the president the power to do an executive order, because we've seen time and time again that it's an abuse of his power that he's created for himself. You know, because now we're back to being a monarchy or a dictatorship if you have something like that in place. What's the point of even having, like, a House and Senate and everything if you're going to have executive orders that he could just sign off whenever he wants to?
Well, I remember the Super Congress, and at the time I was running for Congress. So I said, well, I guess I better run for the Super Congress. But anyway, I remember Leah Bulger, who was with Veterans for Peace, she stormed into the Super Congress because she was calling her congressperson and saying, you know, stop wars and tax the rich. And this is my message. Will you carry my message? She goes, I can't. The Super Congress won't listen to us.
Oh, my God. So they're not like the Super Friends.
Forced her into addressing the Super Congress because she couldn't get through with her own congressman. So, yeah, I knew it was going to go from Super Congress to executive order everything and just make the entire body obsolete. And that's what they've done here in New York City. They've given special powers to the mayor wherein he, you know, basically is, like, he can do executive orders. You saw what Bloomberg did with the mandated vaccine. a bunch of appointees voted the way he wanted them to, and we're all stuck with an something that's going to kill our children. And, of course, the reports of the death toll don't come out sometimes for 4 years, in which case we will have wiped out the toddlers by then. Anyway,
right.
I'm so upset about all of this stuff, but I'm thrilled to interview you, James Blaine. That this is, we're coming to a close, and I wish you success.